everyone. Welcome. I want to welcome you all to tonight's program. First of all, it was a very long time coming. For those of you who might remember, this was planned for before Superstorm Sandy. So for those of you who've waited, we hope that the wait, you will see that we'll have a wonderful program for you. Thank you. I think we have an overwhelming crowd that we're very happy to see. My name is Janine Kay. I'm the New Jersey Regional Director for Yeshiva University, and I'm here to welcome you and really to say thank you again for coming, and really to also thank Keter Torah for hosting, Rabbi Baum, as well as the sisterhood, Atara, for hosting us, as well as sponsoring food. And to Beth Abraham and for the RCBC, who also served as co-sponsors. Tonight's program is brought to you by Yeshiva University's Program for Jewish Genetic Health in conjunction with Yeshiva's social and matchmaking organization, YU Connects. We have representative from YU Connects, Mindy Eisenman. I also want to acknowledge Dr. Efrat Sobolewski, who is the director of YU Connects, and thank her for coming. Yeshiva University is deeply committed to continuing the partnership and strengthening ties in Bergen County. From educational programs to events for our singles, which YU Connects helps, YU's mission is to reach out beyond its campuses and provide programs like tonight's evening to educate, enlighten, and hopefully inspire. For tonight's program, experts in various fields will be providing an overview and a discussion of the issues to consider when deciding whether or not to share personal information, family genetic information, with dating partners, fiancés, and spouses. It's now my privilege to introduce Hani Weissman, a genetic counselor with YU's Program for Jewish Genetic Health, who will serve as tonight's moderator. Thank you.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Hani Weissman. I'm a genetic counselor. I work at Montefiore Medical Center doing both reproductive and cancer genetic counseling, and I work with the Program for Jewish Genetic Health of Yeshiva University. So the Program for Jewish Genetic Health was established with the goal that nobody in the Jewish community facing a genetic health issue is deprived of proper care due to lack of awareness, financial barriers, or difficulty navigating the medical system. To achieve these goals, we provide, we help provide accessible and affordable options for carrier testing for common Jewish genetic diseases, both at community screens and also in our clinical office. We also have educational sessions like tonight's to help spread awareness about genetic issues in the community. Our contact information is on the brochures, and many of our program members are here tonight. So we feel very privileged that we're able to pull together such a wonderful group of speakers and panelists for tonight's discussion. Many of you know Rabbi Yaakov Neuberger, Rosh Yeshiva at the Yeshiva Program, Mazur School of Talmudic Studies of Yeshiva University. He's also the spiritual leader of Congregation Beth Abraham. Rabbi Neuberger is an authority on issues related to marital relationships and Tarat HaMishpacha. He offers his services to help young men train for married life and prepare to build a proper Jewish home built on Jewish law and spirit. Mrs. Mindy Eisenman is the full-time staff connector at YU Connects, the Yeshiva University program that has made more than 90 successful matches since its inception in 2008. Mrs. Eisenman teaches various courses at Stern College in Tanakh, Tarat HaMishpacha, and relationships, and is also a certified Shalom Workshop instructor. And Dr. Naomi Greenblatt, who received her medical degree from New York University School of Medicine and fulfilled her residency in psychiatry at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, Montefiore Medical Center, and is a diplomat of the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology. Dr. Greenblatt maintains a private practice in reproductive psychiatry, addressing all areas of women's mental health. Dr. Greenblatt is passionate about the work that she does and has lectured to organizations and at charity events about the importance of women maintaining emotional wellness. Tonight we hope to discuss some of the halachic, psychological, and practical issues which come up when considering shidduchim and medical or genetic issues in the family history. Tonight we will not be talking about disclosure related to social issues, such as domestic violence, a person in the family who's incarcerated, financial issues in the family, or substance abuse. These issues are equally as important and need to be addressed. However, for the purposes of our program tonight, they fall outside of the realm of our discussion. We will also not be discussing general population carrier screening for Ashkenazi Jewish genetic diseases, which is done by Dor Yeshurim and also through open testing options, such as the one that our program provides. This too is extremely important, but again, falls outside of the scope of our discussion tonight. Family health history is very important from both a medical and genetic standpoint. For some genetic issues, there's a 50% chance for a child to inherit it from their parent. For others, the genetic component is not as strong, and heritability might not be as clear-cut. For some diseases, an individual might be at heightened risk simply because of their family history, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he or she will ever develop one of those conditions. Family health history may become important when it comes to shidduchim as well, because it gives us an insight into the potential medical issues that a person may develop throughout their lifetime, and also some of the issues that a person might be able to pass on to their children. As a genetics professional, I definitely fall into the camp that believes that knowledge is power. The more information we have, the better we can help provide treatment, the better we can help prepare ourselves and our families, and we can figure out how to try and prevent medical issues that might arise. Unfortunately, there are a number of reasons that this vital information falls through the cracks. For one thing, individuals tend to be terrible historians. Many people don't know that there are issues in their family history because no one talks about it. Not because it's not there. This might be because people don't want to deal with knowing that they might be at risk, or because they don't want other people outside of the family to find out because of fear of discrimination or stigmatization. Our program tonight is going to be based on two scenarios. They're going to be scenarios of hypothetical families and situations that might arise when it comes to disclosure about medical and genetics issues. I'm going to introduce the scenarios and pose a few general questions for our panelists, and then give them an opportunity to discuss the scenarios and share their experiences and opinions. At the end, we'll have some time for questions, so I'll ask that you hold any of your questions about the scenarios until the end so we make sure to reach all of the topics that we'd like to discuss. One thing that I want to encourage you to think about as we move through our program is what might be considered a big deal to you. There are a lot of things that clinically we would consider one thing more severe than another, but no one is going to be able to tell you what you consider a big deal. And the other thing that I do want to just mention, which no one really likes to hear, is that just because someone has a clean slate in terms of their family history doesn't mean that they're immune from any issues that might arise throughout their lifetime. No one likes to hear it, but rare and serious things can happen to anyone, even with no family history. So let's get started with our scenarios. You can follow along with me on the family trees that you have on your tables. These family trees are called pedigrees. That's basically a way that we would draw out the family history. Just so that you have a better sense of what you're looking at, women are depicted as circles, men are depicted as squares, and the arrow will be pointing to the person who's the subject of our scenario. Okay, so our first scenario, we have a girl, she's 22 years old, and her mother had breast cancer a few years ago. I'm just gonna orient myself here as well. She has a very strong family history of breast cancer, so you could see her mother, her aunt, and also her paternal great aunt all had breast cancer. They're all shaded in a darker color. Her mother recently got tested for mutations in the breast cancer genes, commonly called the BRCA genes or BRCA genes, and her mother did find out that she has one of these BRCA mutations. So just a little bit of information that you guys should know or what might help you understand the scenario a little bit better. Most cases of cancer are sporadic. Only about 5 to 10% of cases of cancer have some sort of a hereditary component to them. And these BRCA genes, the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes, are genes whose role in the body is to actually protect us from developing cancer. When there's a mistake in one of those genes, that's when they don't do their job and they don't protect us from developing cancer the way they should. Women who are BRCA carriers have a significantly increased risk to develop both breast and ovarian cancer in their lifetimes in comparison to the general population. However, carrying a BRCA mutation does not mean that one will definitely develop cancer. For women who have BRCA mutations, there are recommendations that they screen for cancer more frequently and starting earlier, starting at the age of 25, so that we can catch cancer at an earlier and treatable stage. And these women also have options for preventive surgeries to help them reduce their risk for both breast and ovarian cancer. And BRCA carriers, or someone with a BRCA mutation, have a 50-50 chance of passing it on to each child, so it can be passed on to both men and women. Men who are BRCA mutation carriers also have higher cancer risks, and they can also pass it on to children. So in our scenario, this girl has a 50-50 chance of having a BRCA mutation because her mother has a BRCA mutation. Okay, our second scenario is one of mental illness. We have that on the second, or the other side of your sheet. We have a boy who's 23 years old. He's one of 8 children, and his mother and sister both have depression. He has a brother with bipolar disorder, and he has a first cousin who committed suicide. So a little bit of information to help you understand how this has anything to do with genetics. When I look at this family history, this to me is concerning because it looks like a very strong family history of mental illness. And when we think of mental illness, each mental illness, depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, they all have their own diagnostic criteria. They are very, very separate conditions. But when we see them running in a family together, it's suggestive of there being something inherited in the family that's causing people to have a higher chance, potentially, for mental illness. So for example, if one individual has depression, their first degree relative, so their parent, child, or sibling, has anywhere from a 5 to 30% chance to develop depression. For an individual with bipolar disorder, their first degree relative, parent, child, or sibling, has anywhere from a 5 to 20% chance to develop bipolar disorder. Mental illness is considered multifactorial, which means that there are a lot of different things which are going to contribute to an individual developing any form of mental illness, including genetic and also lifestyle, environmental factors, the death of a loved one, medications. There are a lot of things that contribute. It's not only genetic, and it's not only environmental. And then the last thing, which I think is important to point out, is that there's no genetic test for mental illness. We don't know what those genes are. We don't know what those genetic components are that contribute to mental illness. So there's no clear-cut test, whereas in the previous scenario, we could test and give someone a more clear-cut answer. This 23-year-old boy's risk for mental illness is just based solely on the family history. Okay, so now we have two pretty heavy topics to discuss. The questions that I'd like to pose and sort of the things that we're thinking about tonight are to tell or not to tell, right? Does someone need to divulge this information to a shadchan if the shadchan's trying to set them up? Does the shadchan need to divulge this information to a potential partner or someone they'd like to set them up with? Is this something that if people are not dating through a shadchan system, but they are in a relationship, does this need to be divulged? At what point in a relationship should this be disclosed? Do they only need to disclose if someone prompts them and asks the question? So I think there's some interesting things to talk about. And I'd like to open it up. I think we decided from the coin toss beforehand that Dr. Greenblatt was going to go first.
First of all, thank you all for coming. I think this is actually a really nice turnout and indicative of the fact that everyone here is really interested in the topic and wants to educate themselves, which is really appreciated. In thinking about the panel presentation for tonight, I found myself challenged with organizing my opinion about each of these cases. While I knew what I wanted to communicate, organizing it did not come as easily as I would have liked. As a psychiatrist, I naturally pondered why this was happening and realized that I'm potentially speaking to three different groups in the audience tonight. The first group is the young adults themselves, who might be trying to figure out how they want to handle these difficult issues and may be challenged as their families may agree or disagree with their opinions. The second group is parents in which there is some family history of a genetic issue. And the third group is parents of children who may date or be suggested a shidduch of an individual who has a family history of a genetic condition. How I present the information may be heard differently by each of the people in those three groups. So it was definitely a challenge. I'm going to begin by addressing group one, which is the young individuals themselves, although I think no one here in the room is really in shidduchim, potentially, but I think it's important to address. I think men and women need to think about their genetic risks as individuals before being concerned about implications in dating, and I feel extremely strongly about this. While this topic was addressing how individuals should disclose or not disclose, I think in both these scenarios we have to really think about what the individual's opinion about their own genetic risk is. Often the fear of these issues in dating leads to some level of denial and an individual not arming themselves with the knowledge and plan for how they, as an individual, would like to be proactive in prevention as well as early diagnoses. If we think about the BRCA1 case, questions that we'd want to discuss with this girl is, does she desire to know her status, if she's a carrier of this gene or not, and how will it impact decisions that she may make about screening as well as reproductive decisions? Can she make any holistic or lifestyle changes that will decrease her risk if she has that knowledge? And is it important for her to find a spouse that will be supportive if she is a carrier and in fact then will have almost a 90% lifetime risk of developing cancer? In the case of the depression, can the boy do anything to decrease his risk, whether it's taking vitamins, omega-3, or supplements, whether it's learning good coping skills, whether it's being proactive at the early onset of symptoms and seeking help? And is it important to him that his spouse not stigmatize his family members and be supportive to them? Professionals need to guide men and women with genetic risks and help them face a specific set of decisions and think through these issues in advance. Careful consideration of these choices can potentially help these men and women maximize their support and well-being and avoid painful rejection. How one chooses to move forward is highly individualized, and there's not a one-size-fits-all answer for any of these questions. Here are a specific set of decisions that I would discuss with a person as well as their parents, which would be the second group that I'm addressing tonight, that are potentially dealing with issues of genetic risk in their family. And I refer to these decisions as the three W's: why tell, what to tell, and when to tell. The factors that shape all three of these decisions are medical, psychological, and social. The medical issues are: what is the type of disease? Is it cancer? Is it a thyroid issue? Is it mental health? That's going to influence someone's decision. Is the family history weak or strong? Is there a distant relative, 2 first-degree relatives, or 5 first-degree relatives? Do the boy or girl already exhibit symptoms themselves? Is it a treatable condition? And are there any testing that's already been done? And if so, what are the results? The psychological issues that may influence these three W's are: do they have a fear or past experience of rejection that came from disclosure? And what are their desires for having children, and how will their disclosure impact that? And the social implications are the prospective partner's expectations and desires concerning the relationship and future children, as well as the length and nature of the relationship. So let's start with the first W, why tell? One of the obvious reasons is an ethical obligation, and for that I'm going to defer to Rabbi Neuberger, who I think will address that shortly. But do we have an ethical obligation to disclose a genetic risk? The second why of why someone might tell is there a disease in the family that may not be easily hidden? So in the case of the mother who had breast cancer and she was a carrier, the potential person who's going into the family, it may not be obvious to them. But in the second case, where there is a history of mental illness in the family and a brother with bipolar disorder, it may not be something that someone can hide, even if they chose to, because children would potentially be affected. And also because reactions to disclosure of genetic risks can serve as a test of the relationship itself. How supportive is the potential spouse and their family? Reasons people may choose not to tell is because of fear of rejection. The second W, when to tell. I think it's important before young individuals go into dating for them to really think about this ahead of time and consult with their family, their RUV, and anybody who's part of their support system. I think trying to establish predetermined points at which a person chooses to tell is beneficial and alleviates anxiety in such situations. And again, there's no one-size-fits-all answer. I've heard people who have said at the 50% point, which is 50% from when you start dating until you're engaged. And depending on the circles you're in, that could be the fourth date or it could be the 30th date. Other people choose to tell up front and tell the shotgun or whoever's setting them up. But I think while there's not one right answer, having someone really give thought to that before they enter dating is important. There was a study done in 2011 at Columbia University, and the article published was entitled In Sickness and in Health, Disclosure of Genetic Risks in Dating. 64 individuals who were confronting Huntington's disease, alpha-1 antitrypsin, and breast cancer were questioned about their experience in disclosure in dating. All participants, 100% of them in the study, felt that they had an ethical obligation to tell the other person once they've definitely decided to get married. However, the debate of when to tell before the commitment is firmly established was left open. There are people who believe in telling only if asked, which is what you refer to. That's omission versus lying, and I don't recommend that, and we'll get to that shortly. The third W is what to tell. And what I often guide people, and I think that regardless of the genetic disclosure they're having, is that disclosure should be a process and doesn't have to be a one-time full disclosure. By having it done in a process and gradually opening the door to eventual full revelation rather than disclosing completely at once, it allows for flexibility of eventually leading to more information. So people may choose to say something runs in the family instead of saying there's a genetic, you know, gene that my mother carries and see how someone responds. And that both protects them against the rejection, it protects personal information that they may not choose to share with the 30 people that they might date before they end up finding the right person, and it also gives them the opportunity to feel out someone's response. Other things that may come out as they do this slow revelation, which is a process, is what's the eventual prognosis of the mutation. So if someone chooses to say, my mother had breast cancer, I just want you to know, and then somewhere further down the road finds out, well, actually, she's a carrier for the gene, there then might be a discussion about, well, what does that mean as far as her risks of being a carrier? That may not be the information that she chooses to disclose at the initial onset. By the way, I might have this gene and I have a 90% chance of getting cancer. Also, what's the course of the illness? For example, with the BRCA1 genetic risk, even though her risk of getting cancer is high, there are things such as early screening or prophylactic surgery once a woman is done with her childbearing years that may reduce her risk, and that's important in sharing that information with someone. When it comes to mental illness, it's important to also understand what is the course of the illness. Depression and bipolar disorder can have a relapsing, remitting course that can often be unpredictable. And what are the reproductive implications? Because genetic issues have reproductive implications, disclosure differs from disclosure of any other aspect of oneself, including other disabilities and diagnoses, since genetics can also affect future generations. I can comment on two situations that I've been involved with in which these questions were not asked up front, and the marriage has been significantly negatively impacted because of the lack of disclosure. One case is a girl who was thought to have some reproductive issues, which would make it unlikely that she could have children. Again, this is not a genetic issue, but it's a matter of disclosure, and I thought it was important to bring up. She was not told this, although she suspected it from the number of appointments she had, nor was her spouse informed of this information. Now, after 12 years of marriage without children, she has extreme feelings of guilt that her husband was not allowed to choose if he was okay with this risk. And she struggles with this guilt as well as anger at her parents for making the decision for her. The second is a woman with bipolar disorder, controlled on medication, as well as a family history of bipolar disorder, who never told her husband either before or after the marriage. They have one son together, and during her pregnancy, she went off medication on her own. That son is now older, and her husband desires to have another baby. She's currently taking lithium, and her husband doesn't know about it, and because of that, she's on birth control because she can't get pregnant on lithium. She came to consult with me recently, now 10 years and many omissions into the marriage, and it's a real challenge with how to address this, and I don't believe that the marriage is on solid grounds because of it. I'd like to conclude my remarks by discussing the emerging field of epigenetics, which is the study of how individual genes can be activated or deactivated by life experiences that we may have. This is geared to group three that may be present tonight, parents of children who may be suggested shidduchim where there is a family genetic risk. Scientists have found that our genes are not fixed in a predetermined program simply passed from one generation to the next. Instead, genes can be turned on or off from our environment. What we eat, how much stress we undergo, and what toxins we are exposed to can alter the genetic legacy that we pass to our children and our grandchildren. So while using statistics to guide us, once one is told about a genetic risk, we must be reminded that genetic risk is not an exact science and educate ourselves properly about the implications of this risk. When counseling parents of a boy or girl considering dating someone who has a history of mental illness, I'm often asked the question, can you guarantee me this girl won't relapse? And my answer is always, I can't guarantee that you or I will not wake up tomorrow morning with depression. I can tell you that this person's risk is higher, but I can also tell you things that they've done to combat this risk, and that we're fortunate to know that if needed, medication is available. Let me just describe one case that I was involved in that really addresses all three groups that I was addressing tonight and how educated decisions that will hopefully come from panels such as this evening's would have been beneficial to these individuals. I started to see a young girl with a history of moderate depression and anxiety. Her symptoms were not affecting her lifestyle to anyone else's eye, but really were impacting her own experience. There was also a family history of depression as well in her mother, and the fact that she was living at home with her mother was definitely impacting her symptoms. In other words, once she would get out of her parents' house, her risk of her own symptoms would be greatly diminished. Her parents were not supportive of her decision to start medication because they were concerned about shidduchim, and I really worked hard to advise them that it was not in their daughter's best interest to put shidduchim over her own well-being. So she started medication and sure enough went into shidduchim. She consulted with her rav and was told that she needs to disclose at the 50% point, which in her case was the fifth date. She disclosed this information to a boy who took it very hard, but after some thought decided that he was okay with it. His mother, however, was not okay with it. I spent several hours educating her. In this particular case, I felt that the girl's risk of depression was actually less than anyone else's because she had spent so many years in therapy learning good coping skills that she actually was well prepared to work through some of the issues. The mother could not accept this as a possible mate for her son, and the relationship was broken off just before an engagement was announced. Here's the catch to this case. The boy himself was on medication, and he never told his mother. The fact that when presented with his mother's opposition, he still chose not to disclose it was telling information, in my opinion, that this was not a match that would have been suitable for the girl. Furthermore, the boy's father had died at a young age from cancer that could be hereditary and was never seen as an issue that the girl might want to consider in her thinking about the match because there was no known genetic component that was told to her about the type of cancer he had. In a sense, this case not only encompasses all three groups that I was saying I'm addressing today, but also the two case scenarios that were presented because one has a family history of mental illness and one has a family history of depression. The couple did not get engaged and the girl continued dating using her 50% rule of thumb. She is now happily married with a daughter and she feels thankful that by disclosing, not only did she marry someone who is supportive and encouraging, but also that she was prevented from marrying someone that might not have been the right match. Along the same note, the following editorial was written by the husband of a client that I see, and I read it to you with his permission. It's entitled Mental Health Compatibility, and I think it appropriately describes what was right for this couple. My wife and I both take psychiatric medications. Both of us dated people without known issues and were painfully rejected after making the disclosure more than once. In an act of clear hashgacha, our doctor was the one who set us up, not me. The other doctor. Wish I could take credit. We discussed the details of our issues in the right environment and with prior notice on our fourth date. We understand that some opinion that those with mental health issues should not intermarry and should instead choose to date individuals with physical handicaps. Indeed, someone who was also taking medication refused, thankfully, to continue to date my wife for precisely this reason. We couldn't disagree more. The taking of medication, both the ubiquitous hardships prior to seeking professional help and coping with the internal shame of taking pills, leaves an indelible imprint on one's personality. It enriches and enhances our ability to connect with Hashem and to empathize with those who suffer. Obviously, this commonality enhances our marriage. We would note that with regards to disclosure, I can only beseech those who are on the receiving end to display extreme sensitivity. It is always harder and more difficult for one making the disclosure. Show care and concern to Hashem's children, and in that merit, you should find your zivug soon. May we see the end of the Shidduch crisis speedily in our days. Its name withheld.
I want to first mention what an honor it is to sit on a panel with such esteemed professionals. YU Connects is in a unique position in that we happen to have an advisory council with professionals such as Dr. Greenblatt and Dr. Pelkowitz. We also have the halachic advisors of all the Rashi Yeshiva, Rabbi Neuberger, Rav Schechter, Rav Willig. We never make decisions on our own. It's really beautiful that we have access to all of YU resources and all of our questions about counseling, coaching, halacha are all right there available to us. And therefore, all of these, while I know that you are looking sometimes for a little bit of opinion in terms of practice, but really everything is done through the proper channels. In terms of disclosure, in both cases, when someone chooses to go through a matchmaker, so one of the things that we encourage is obviously not using the matchmaker. The matchmaker sets you up, but at a certain point, you want to develop a certain amount of emotional openness, discussion amongst the two of you that does not involve a third party, not just a matchmaker, but even a parent. When a couple feels comfortable enough to talk to each other without anyone else, that would be the time that I would always encourage someone to make a mention. If there is something that you feel the need to disclose, whether it's medical or personal, this would be the time to disclose. I also, at the same time, advise them that if the other person in the relationship chooses to disclose something to you, as Dr. Greenblatt had mentioned, that there should be a certain amount of compassion, respect, and recognition that this is not a difficult place for them to be. Even if you can't handle it at some point, that's okay, but during the process, you should have that sensitivity. For people that are in the shidduch world, when they're dating, it's very important for them to talk to each other, to develop this kind of emotional openness. They need to be open with each other. Otherwise, there won't be a relationship. It's all about the relationship. It's not about necessarily I need to get married as much as I want to be in a relationship with someone who I'm close with, who's my best friend. You can't develop that if you do not talk to people, whether it's a medical decision or a personal problem that has, you know, occurred over your life. There's another aspect that comes in. When someone suggests a match to a child, to your child, or to you specifically, and you never heard of the person, it's not like they just met at a gathering. So sometimes you might ask for a reference. So when you're thinking of giving someone as a reference, you need to recognize that if there is something in your family that they might know, the reference that is, you need to prep them and coach them as to what to say. Sometimes, depending on what the issue is, we encourage the person to tell the reference that, you know, it came up. I casually mentioned, you know, I'm not 100% sure, but if your child decides to date this person, you should discuss it with them. I don't really know enough about the situation. We also recommend that if it's something specific, such as one of these two cases, that a person discusses it with their rav to be sure exactly how to handle it with a reference. It's very important because you don't want a reference to disclose something that really isn't their place to disclose. But also, recently I had a woman call to tell me that her son has asthma. He lives a normal life, but it's very important to her that before anyone goes out with him, they know he has asthma. She doesn't want it to be a problem. She doesn't want it to be something that after a date or two, the girl says, oh, he has asthma, I don't want to go out with him. So it's important sometimes to listen to what people are saying. I always ask the person that I meet with, is there a medical condition that you would like to share with me? This is not my place for me to then tell the other person, but to then encourage gently the person that I'm coaching when to disclose it. We always grapple with the idea of trust. When you're working with someone, when you're coaching them, you want them to trust you. But on the other hand, when you're setting them up, you want that person to trust you as well. So therefore, if someone tells me specifically, oh, they would never go out with someone who has some genetic issue, so if I know there's a genetic issue, so then I discuss it with a Rav. Do I nix this idea because they're insistent? Do I give it a chance and let it come out? Because it is a matter of trust, and that's important. But if no one brings it up, so then as long as, with the Rav's permission, I can then set it up. Some people actually feel more comfortable sharing this information with the third party, with the matchmaker, so that this way it does come out at the right time. I worked with a young lady who had a sister who had a mental disability, and the parents spoke to their Rav first and then spoke to me. They wanted me to be aware of it. They wanted me to know that they were going to handle it through their Rav, and the young lady was going to tell the gentleman at a certain point. They didn't want me to be concerned at all. And then when I spoke to the young lady, she said to me, yes, and she would let me know when it occurred, so that this way, if he were to talk to me about it, that I would then have that information. These are not easy discussions to have. However, as Dr. Greenblatt mentioned, so often we see in our society, you know, a person thinks that they have a clean slate, absolutely nothing wrong. But then the next day, something occurs, and we are all Hashem's children, and I hope everyone who is searching for their children or for their friends' children, I hope the search and the process goes easily.
Most of Shadchanus is much more cheerful than this. And shouldn't have this color our picture of preparation for marriage. Nevertheless, these are serious issues. And when they come up, they often come up with a great degree of pain. And I think we can be grateful that we have had the opportunity to hear people who are not only so involved as professionals, but also in such a compassionate fashion. The question that usually comes my way is that in these two scenarios, when or does one have to disclose? And there is some literature about it. There are several tshuvas about it. But I think that in our community, it's we don't really need the tshuvas, because in our community, as both Dr. Greenblatt referred to and as Mindy referred to, I can't imagine the marriage being successful later on. If two people enter into a marriage and they haven't disclosed something that is obviously so important that they don't want to disclose it, that the lack of integrity going forward, because I can't imagine not coming out at some point. Even this person was taking lithium. It must have been a master of an actress that her husband hasn't found out over 20 years that she's taking medication. And in order to construct that, you have to have a series of lies, a network of lies in a marriage. So we could never advocate a marriage like that. We could never advocate a marriage that people go into it not disclosing something which is so important to the course of life later on, and can have an impact in life later on, and something which again is so important that I feel uncomfortable with it. So that means we could never advocate, and it would be very unwise to advocate, certainly in our community, the way that we function. because when it comes out, it has to be a source of terrible pain, and it has to be a source of a tremendous disruption in marital life. And I don't know if a marriage can survive that. And if it, certainly not without the very, very significant counseling and with a lot of ulterior motives to make the marriage last. So that in and of itself, there are halachic issues of mekachtos, of onah. We cannot have the bar of integrity going into marriage be lower than the bar of integrity of selling a car, of doing business in the marketplace. So it's inconceivable that one would go into a marriage with a lower standard of integrity. But those tshuvas, again, I don't think are germane for our purpose. The question in our community is how and when. I feel very strongly that it should be the two people who are dating who divulge it to each other. I don't think that the shadchan should be made aware of it, because any information which is so intensely private, I should have as much control over it as possible, and I should be able to keep it as private as possible. And all this genetic information is about my family. I have siblings. I have nieces and nephews. So I don't have the right to divulge information beyond anything which is absolutely necessary going forward. So I would be in favor, and I do understand that there are times, and that's what Mindy mentioned, there are times when not divulging causes greater pain. In other words, that a person has been rejected so many times after the 50% point that they would rather just get out there, and that has to be a family discussion, I believe, and they have to sit down together, other members of the family, whoever's going to be impacted by it. Because it could be members of a family who are dating in a different community. And information crosses communities. But the way that different people react to different communities is well beyond our control. So every situation has to be discussed on its own. Generally speaking, I think it's wiser that the shadchan not be aware of it. Having information, as we began with, is power, and it may give too much power to a shadchan who doesn't need that kind of information. That's what I would think. When does one tell? So I think that the formula is that at a point where I will be, where if this is something, if it's a maker or breaker, where I will not be causing pain to the person that I'm dating, and I've had a chance to define myself beyond my genetic makeup and beyond the illness. What we want people to do is to meet each other, to get to know each other. The moment you list a genetic concern or profile, so as we all know, that often can define the person. Often a disability defines the person. That is what goes on people's minds. So we want the couple to meet and be able to define themselves based on their personalities and their interests and what excites them. And we want them to be able to disclose before the point where, if this is something that the girl or the boy cannot see in their future, so we're not causing pain to that person. They haven't become so connected that having to break up will cause, I don't have the right to cause pain to somebody else. So that's the formula that I would use. The 50% matches that good. If, I think it depends. But that's the advice that I think makes a lot of sense in our community. And what the other advantage of giving the couple the ability to make their own decision, and also to make it a little bit into the relationship, is because there's so much information that one needs from a professional and not from the street. And the moment the information gets introduced early, the information comes from the street. It comes from my, what I read in the Reader's Digest, but it comes from what I heard at the Shabbos table. And that, you can make a decision based on information. If there's a little bit of a relationship, and the young man and the young woman see that they connect with the person, this chemistry, so then, at the very least, they'll seek out real information from real professionals, see what this information has in store for them, and they will be able to incorporate it in the complexities of their own lives, and see how they'll seek counsel in making decisions on how to go forward.
Okay. Before we open it up to questions, I want to address one question to all three panelists. We actually, you might not know this, you might know this, but we ran a similar program back last May on Long Island, and after the program, someone approached me and said, you know, this is great, you know, I've heard three very wonderful panelists basically say that, you know, this is important information and important to be able to, you know, share it and disclose it, but honestly, I wouldn't disclose this information. I'm concerned, and this is the person told me, I'm concerned that my kids are not going to get married. If I tell, you know, or if my children tell people, or if I tell people that this issue is in my family, I don't want this to be something that prevents my children from finding someone or from getting married or from even being set up. So my question is, how would you address that person? You can do it from your seat if you like.
I feel strongly that there's so much focus on a shidduch crisis that we have to remember there's a marriage crisis. And the divorce rate, even in our communities, is high. So while I understand that parent's concern, I similarly agree very strongly with what Neuberger said, which is if you send a child into a marriage without full disclosure or deep into a relationship without full disclosure, it's not a relationship that's going to be on solid ground. So yes, it is for sure a more challenging process, and your child may be rejected from certain relationships. However, I think those relationships may not be ideal for your child. And in the case of the girl who potentially has a 50% chance of being a carrier for breast cancer and then a 90% chance of developing breast cancer, I hope that she marries someone who is supportive of that. And even if she herself doesn't carry the gene, she may have siblings who carry the gene. Her mother may have the recurrence. So while I understand the concern, I think the shidduch crisis is, you know, as someone who treats postpartum depression, I feel like there's so much focus on the pregnancy, no one thinks about what happens after. And this would be a very, very similar scenario where, yes, it's a shidduch crisis, but there's also a marriage crisis.
No, I think it's very interesting. I believe you said that it was a parent that mentioned mm-hmm. it, correct? So the fact is that I find that most people are very interested in what someone else has. I mean, they don't necessarily want to take responsibility for what might be going on in their own family. And as both Ray Neuberger and Dr. Greenblatt mentioned, the longer we get, I guess the longer our lives go away from the Holocaust, the more family members we have, the more we will see that everyone has something. Recently, there's a couple that I met. They were looking, you know, for a match for their son. And the father happened to mention to me that the mother has this gene. And I said, did you know that when you married her, you know, he was talking to me? So he said, yes, he did. Her mother actually had passed away from breast cancer, but you know, now there are so many things that can be done, and you know, it turns out actually that she had surgery, and you know, Baruch Hashem, the child got married, and it happens to be that right now the father is battling a cancer that is not genetic, and I don't want to say it's ironic, but it just goes to show, you know, here he was so concerned about the, you know, how would people respond, because his wife had this, but she's, Baruch Hashem, she's perfectly healthy now, but now he's the one that just, it came out of nowhere. And as Dr. Greenblatt mentioned, it's about marriage, it's really about relationships. Too often, I have met people who, unfortunately, have gone through a divorce. I don't necessarily ask why they got divorced, but someone, a mother, a relative, someone needs to call me afterwards to say, you know, there's nothing wrong with her, but he didn't tell us about some horrible something. So I happened to once ask this relative who felt the need to call me, what if he would have told you? She said, well, maybe then we could have at least had some trust, but what else could he be hiding if he didn't disclose this? You know, there could be so many other things, and she needed to get out. So I think that we have to have a little bit more faith in our children. And again, as Dr. Greenblatt actually mentioned, we each have to look into our own selves and see what can we handle. We each can handle a lot more than we think. Some people can handle this kind of problem. Other people can handle that kind of problem. And it's something we have to think about when we're ready to consider dating.
Thank you.
I think that the there's an area where I think, and again, in our community, different communities function in different ways. But in our community, it's so patently clear that one has to share this information for reasons that were cited, and just to re-emphasize, because there are protocols to take in order to deal with these situations. A person who has a BRCA gene may, the medical protocols, but one protocol is to try to have as many children as one wants early on in life. And so these are things that once we know that it's so clear to us, then one has to disclose, then one has to be confident that it's all part of the government plan, that so we have to be machazi people in this area. The BRCA gene happens to be an interesting model, because if we would have had this discussion maybe 10 years ago, then the BRCA gene would be an information with which we just didn't know what to do with. So if a person has information and they're not sure what they don't have information about the information, then one can say maybe this need not be disclosed, because we don't know what to do with it. Maybe we don't have to find out the information. And it could be, I'm hoping, that if we have this discussion again in 10 years from now, so then we will have protocols, and maybe we'll have even, I don't know if it's biologically possible, certain kind of embryonic tests to reduce the chance of BRCA gene. So the discussion will change. But I think that the BRCA gene is an interesting marker of how these decisions have to be made. But once there's clarity, I think, in how to make the decision, so then one has to be tough on it, the Rebbe will provide. And it's providing has to be provided.
Thank you all. So we spoke about some really interesting topics tonight. And I want you all to just think back to one of the scenarios that we discussed and just appreciate that if I were to change even one detail, the conversation might be completely different, right? So I think what I want to highlight is that every scenario and any scenario that you might think of in your head right now or that you might encounter throughout your life is going to be different and will need to be approached in a very different way. And I want to encourage you to use the resources that you have available to you, so your rabbis, professional psychologists, psychiatrists. There are resources that are out there, and these are not issues that people should need to deal with on their own, specifically because they are so complex. I hope you enjoyed hearing from our panelists tonight, and I'd like to thank them all for coming out and sharing their expertise and participating in this discussion. And at this point, I want to open up the floor for questions, if anyone has questions about the specific scenarios we talked about or something that one of the panelists brought up. Yes.
Things get into contact. When at present, one out of eight women in the general
I will tell you when I meet with people. In all the years that I have been doing this, no one actually came and said to me, there is mental illness in my family. But once in a while, they personally want to share a medical condition that they want me to be aware of, just in case it comes up before they disclose it, so that this way it doesn't look like I necessarily, you know, they wanted me to trust them. But I do not require them to tell me. It's not a question that, you know, that's why I phrased it in such a way as, is there something you would like to share with me? It's not necessary, but is there something you would like to share with me? Because sometimes with my help, perhaps they haven't asked a rav yet, perhaps they haven't sought counseling yet, and these are of course very important. But I don't require it, and as I mentioned, no one has ever actually came forward and said anything to me about it. But when they are ready to move beyond me, and I always constantly check in with them, even if they do, how are things going? Is there anything you want to discuss with me? They do, you know, I do let them know that if there is anything that you want to share with the other person, this would be a good time, whether it's medical, whether it's personal. But I don't require people to tell me private information.
Yeah. I would think when people are asking, when people are inquiring of getting references on a potential date, so I think that and the person who's the referee is aware of this information. So I agree with you that the referee is very much caught because the information is important. There is a halachic obligation to share the information if it will not be shared. I'll put it this way: there is a halachic obligation to respond with integrity. On the other hand, I think that if the information is given before they meet, it's unfair because they're divulging information to a much greater group of people than is halachically acceptable. And as you said, you're maybe making a decision in a totally inappropriate way because they haven't met each other. But then it does become the responsibility of the referee or of the shadchan to make sure that the party does divulge. In other words, it's the appropriate thing would be to go over the person that I was asked to be referenced. I did not divulge, but you must. And then it becomes an obligation to make sure that if the shidduch does continue, that at some point they, in fact, divulge. My other reaction to what you said is only that that not to be dismissive of depression. That depression is a... It's a darkness in life that, as you know, but from your work, that it's it goes beyond a person's ability to understand unless it's discussed with them. So when you said that that a large number of people have some depressive episode, I think it's very important to put it again in perspective that it's extremely important that somebody who's going into a relationship where this is part of the picture to get information from a professional who will share this information with them, but will also share with information the tremendous responsibility and support that a spouse has to be if this is something to make.
Yes.
A little bit different than what we've been speaking about, genetic disorders and divulging, because we haven't touched on that, but I see it in the literature. The difference between that and what we're saying is that this is a two-partner where both people have to give their genes. So let's say your family has the gene, you know it, there's someone in your family with that. It's not a secret. At what point in our community, you're saying, you still look at our community, we don't
That's a very good question. I apologize to our presenter, since this was not one of the things that we discussed in advance to prep them. I'll share from my perspective, since this is something that we do deal with in our clinical office very frequently. Personally, I recommend that individuals get testing done as soon as possible, even before they're in a relationship, since the genetic test results will not change. There might be... Meaning,
15,
when they no,
you know it's in your family,
not
you know
when not when they are minors, but when they're at a point where they might think about starting to date, if they're thinking about starting to look for a relationship, then it's worthwhile information to have. When it comes to when they feel comfortable sharing, is that along the lines of the same conversation we've been having of when they feel comfortable sharing, right? It's an honest discussion that a couple has to have. It's a discussion that puts them in a slightly vulnerable position because they're implying that they might want to have children with this other person. It's maybe a little bit awkward, but there are a lot of things which might be a little bit awkward about the process of getting to know someone and developing a relationship. But it's something that, if at all possible, before contemplating a pregnancy. So that step might be before they get engaged for some couples. That step might be after they are married, but before they're ready to have kids. And that's going to really depend on the couple themselves and how they feel about it, right? If this is information that you might decide not to get married because you would then have a higher chance or a high chance to have a baby who's affected, then maybe you should have that information before you get married, right? So I think a little bit has to go into it in terms of thought of the couple themselves. And what you might use the information for. Some couples say, we're going to get married no matter what. We'll figure it out and deal with it if we are both carriers. So I'm not going to force them to have testing done earlier, but it's information that will be useful at some point, and they would then figure out the best time for them.
I think I'll just add a point to that. I'm Nicole. I'm also from the Program for Jewish Genetic Health. And the point that you, I think, implied before was that carriers for those kind of diseases, Tay-Sachs, cystic fibrosis, Bloom syndrome, familial dysautonomia, those kind of diseases, the carriers themselves are healthy. So the carriers are not going to develop that disease. It's only when they marry someone who's also a carrier for that same disease, the risk of their children being affected comes out. So the carriers are healthy, so it's a different scenario. And we're testing for 18 or 19 diseases right now, and the chance of being a carrier for at least one of those is 1 in 3. So basically, everyone's a carrier. I mean, it's not a stigma, it's a community thing, and that should be, there should be a much lower barrier to disclose that. That can be done early if you know the results. And it's very awkward on the first or second date, but as your relationship progresses, you can talk about whether you have it, whether you want to have it before you get married. But you know, clearly we're advising everyone, before they're contemplating their first pregnancy, you should have that kind of testing, because once you're pregnant, it's a little bit too late to start that.
Other questions?
If I could just add, YFNet is very... It's very important on YFNX, on our website. We advocate genetic testing from the beginning. If you're ready to start dating, then you should definitely do genetic testing. We have it all over our website. We want to make sure that people know exactly where to go. And we encourage people, since I'm at certain points, again, at this point where they feel close enough to divulge whatever it is about themselves, that this is a time that, you know, if there is any kind of genetic, you know, issue, that it's a time to discuss. Because obviously if someone's a carrier for ABC and the other one's a carrier for DEF, it doesn't matter. And I think, as you mentioned, in our society where we are very open about it, it doesn't matter. Because really it's only if you're both a carrier, and then of course we always recommend that you talk to your halachic authority as to how to handle it if you are both a carrier for the same thing. There are some diseases, I believe, that can be worked through and others that perhaps can't. But again, that's really, you know, in the realm of a halachic authority, definitely.
Yes.
So, first of all, thank you for great presentation. Just coming at it from a little different of an angle, is sometimes we see patients who actually, since this age group, and we have not necessarily the population that it should have, but we see from the other side, the women who have breast cancer who refuse to get tested for BRCA gene because they're afraid of being labeled and then having to tell their children, or, you know, having that discussion with your children of being labeled. And I think it's really a terrible, I mean, this is my personal, as an OBGYN, depriving information is power, as you mentioned before. And if we know that someone's BRCA, there's lots of things, left, as Rabbi Neuberger said, which we can do. We can counsel patients. You know, breast cancer is not the same breast cancer as it was 20 years ago. There are so many things that we can do. If someone's identified with a BRCA gene, there's so many ways we can counsel and help that patient and counsel them throughout their lives. And hiding and saying, okay, I'm one of the eight people, I'm not probably one of the ones who has a spread of cancer, in the Ashkenazi Jewish population, it's much higher. And to stick your head in the ground and be an ostrich and say, it's not going to affect me, and I don't want to tell my children to let them make a decision, I think it's is a problem. So, you know, so speaking from the adult population who encounters these problems, I think we have responsibility to for that having that knowledge.
I agree. It's very, very difficult. It's very painful. And what you're saying is very accurate just in terms of screening alone. It's a situation where as a community, we have to catch up to the change in medicine. In other words, again, when this has been discussed in the past, again, I think even as much as 5 years ago, there was not a consensus amongst doctors as to how often to screen, whether one should do surgeries. So 5 years ago, it meant getting information that we did not know what to do with. So it didn't have that much, if a mother got tested, just opened a whole host of questions. Who does she tell? Sisters, children. So we haven't worked through those questions. We're now forced to work through those questions because now testing means we can screen. Testing means decision making. And that's pikuach nefesh. So we're now catching up. The rabbinic counseling community and our general community is now catching up. And it's going to happen over the course of the next few years that it's going to become, we're going to have hopefully establish various protocols of who to tell them, what to tell them, how to tell them. But it's a very difficult decision-making process in terms of, do I tell my sisters? But it's going to have to happen in the next few years. It's going to happen because decisions have to be made and through the educated to make those decisions.
In certain populations, in Toronto, there's certain areas where, you know, women get tested routinely, screened for BRCA genes, Ashkenazi Jewish population. So it's
even with our family history.
Even with our family history. So it's just Ashkenazi Jewish population.
And happening in New Jersey, New York's not happening yet.
Mm-hmm.
Not happening over here.
We're talking about it.
It's an insurance issue. So here it's an expensive test. There was. Funding.
Okay, so that's going to force. It's going to force the both psychologists and halachas to take the next step in educating the community.
Just to look at the other side for a minute of the case that came up at the beginning about the. The shidduch that was broken up because of the mother, and for sure that was that was really great for her anyway, that was broken up. But my question is, I guess as professionals who see these situations, how do you respond to that parent when you encounter them who says, I learned something about the girl that my son is seeing, and I'm going to force this
that particular case, something occurred which Rabbi Neuberger referred to, which is the, I don't know if it was you or someone else, but the mother went to the street for the information before she went to me. By the time she came to me, she had definitively decided that depression was unacceptable. And similar to what you referred to, which is not all mental illness is created equal. As I said in that case, the girl had really moderate symptoms. They weren't visible to anyone else. She really was functioning. She just wasn't optimal. You know, she wasn't functioning optimally for how she wanted to. So when a mother comes to me, I really try and educate them for that particular case. What were the symptoms that she had of depression? What was the duration? How many episodes has someone had? I actually spoke to IU Connectors, it must have been 2 years ago because I was very pregnant at the time, but I spoke to Shadchanim about what are the questions you should ask when someone comes with a history of mental illness. And if anyone's interested, I have a long list of questions that you could ask, including have they been on medication, how many episodes have they had, what were the severity of the episodes, which will really help guide a parent as far as how they want to counsel their kids, as far as what the role of a parent is. Should they have the definitive ability to tell a child this is unacceptable? I'll let Rabbi Neuberger or Mindy answer that, but I think it's dependent on the relationship between parent and child. How capable is the child of making an educated decision? And if the child's going to go against the parent's wishes, do they fully understand? You know, some of these kids are going into dating at 20, and as Rabbi Neuberger said, depression is a very deep, dark place. So if they say, you know what, 5 of their first degree relatives have bipolar disorder, but mom, I'm okay with it, I would recommend that a parent make sure that the child really understands what that means and what the implications can be financially, emotionally, you know, raising children, and the genetics for the future offspring.
It's really a question of seichel. No, that's not a It's not a rabbinic question. It's a question of more of a parenting question. To me, it would seem, and to me, it would seem that, as Dr. you have described, parents have to help the children through the decision-making process. They have to protect the children and make sure that the children understand the decisions that they're making. They have to protect their children from making decisions that are maybe because of a tremendous emotional involvement, and understand the, or at least get the information from professionals so that they can really understand the decision that they're making. At the same time, parents have to be encouraging of their children having emotional romantic relationships and not having paper relationships. So I think the role of the parent is to protect the child and to help the child make a decision, and protection is a full picture. Both of the what strengths that child will need, and to really get the information very, very clear and very accurately, and to make a decision that balances that with the emotional charge and the chemistry that they feel, the importance of that relationship as well.
No, I think okay. It was said.
Were there any other questions? Okay, well, I'd like to thank you all for coming out. It's a very cold night, but we really appreciate that you came and
thank you. I really appreciated all the comments that both of you made, and they were insightful.
It's an honor for me.
I always
thank
learned
you
so much.
You were all excellent. We didn't even have time, but there's an important layer because I chose to come to the culture to run the rest of the counseling services. Both Sarah and myself have had many girls. I look different if there's anyone else.